Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tonight, the scramble for baby formula as a nationwide shortage deepens. Store shelves empty, and many retailers with any formula left are limiting the number of canisters parents can buy. The White House under fire, now announcing steps to help ease the crisis, including ramping up production here at home and providing additional support to low-income families. Plus, a pediatrician will join Top Story tonight with what concerned parents need to know. Also, Russia extending the detention of WNBA star Brittany Griner for at least 1 month. Griner leaving the Russian courthouse in handcuffs as she now faces a decade behind bars. Russia claims she was trying to carry hash oil through the airport, but the U.S. says she's being wrongfully detained. What we're learning about her condition tonight. Deadly capsizing. Nearly a dozen people killed after a boat filled with migrants overturned just off the coast of Puerto Rico. Why authorities fear a growing number of Haitians are taking the dangerous journey to the U.S. And funeral violence. New video shows Israeli police beating Palestinian mourners as they carried the coffin of a slain Palestinian-American journalist. Israel saying the officers were responding to rock throwing, the country releasing its preliminary report on the journalist's death, acknowledging for the first time an Israeli soldier may have fired the fatal shot. Chilling calls. Authorities releasing 911 tapes connected to a serial killer investigation in New York. What one victim told the operator in her final moments. And out of control, the moment a speeding Tesla slammed into a convention center in Ohio. The charges the driver is now facing. Top Story starts right now. Good evening. I'm Gadi Schwartz in for Tom Yamas. We begin tonight with that baby formula crisis. President Biden defending his response today, saying his administration is now taking several steps to stock shelves within the coming weeks. But right now, nearly half of the nation's formula stock is sold out. Parents have been scrambling to get their hands on the limited supply, and the shortage is being fueled by supply chain issues and a Similac factory that is still shut down since a potential bacterial outbreak in February. And now lawmakers are investigating key manufacturers to see how they're addressing the crisis. So let's get right to Jolene Kent.
President Biden today defending his administration's response to the formula crisis.
We moved as quickly as the problem became apparent to us. And we have to move with caution as well as speed, because we got to make sure what we're getting is, in fact, first-rate product.
The White House now vowing to allow more flexibility for low-income families to obtain available formula, import additional formula from abroad, and continue increased production here at home. And today, the White House launching a new website aimed at answering parent questions.
I think we're going to be making some significant progress very shortly.
That progress can't come soon enough for parents like Stephanie Jones.
As of this morning, we were down to one can, and that was when I got desperate and I reached out to women on Facebook.
The 35-year-old is a first-time mom to 7-month-old daughter, Layla.
What has it been like for you to find the formula you need?
Right now, we can't find it. We're searching left and right. You know, I've gone to pretty much every store and called every store to search for it, and we can't find it anywhere.
Congress is also looking for answers. The House Oversight Committee today demanding the four leading companies, which lawmakers say control 90% of formula manufacturing, disclose what they are doing to address this crisis.
It is a national emergency that's amplified in our low-income population, who are mostly minority people and people of color.
For example, Black parents have the lowest rates of breastfeeding, and not having access to enough formula could be dire for their children.
What does this mean in the long-term health of the child?
Poor growth and poor development. A baby grows maximally, the brain grows maximally, and in the first year of life. So deficits in nutrition will significantly impact the baby.
Formula manufacturer Abbott, whose closed Michigan plant is part of what triggered this shortage, today agreeing to a government request to extend rebates for low-income families to obtain other brands of formula through August 31st. Meantime, parents around the country remain frustrated.
Do you think the U.S. government is doing enough?
Obviously, no. I mean, we shouldn't have gotten to this point where moms are desperate in trying to come together to find formula. It should be on the shelves.
And Jolene Kent joins us now from Los Angeles. Joe, for parents who aren't finding formula on the shelves, are there other options where they can turn to?
Yeah, in addition to talking to your pediatrician about switching brands of formula and talking to the manufacturer directly, one thing you can do is reach out to an accredited breast milk bank for donor milk. But for the national network that has the safest milk out there, you do often need a prescription from your pediatrician. And they do, of course, put their neediest, most medically urgent babies first. Gotti.
Thanks, Joe. For more on the shortage and what concerned parents should know, I want to bring in Dr. Tina Carroll Scott, the medical director at South Miami Children's Clinic. Dr. Carroll Scott, what are you seeing in your clinic and what are you hearing from parents that you've spoken with?
So I have so many parents calling me who are incredibly distressed by the shortage. And what I'm telling a lot of my patients now is to not panic and, you know, and to really seek out guidance from your child's pediatrician or OBGYN for newborns. Social media can be helpful in some instances, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there that can seriously harm your child. And so I'm telling a lot of my parents to please stick with the trusted messengers like myself, who can provide credible information to keep your baby safe. There are a few things that parents can do safely, as mentioned before. Switching your baby's formula to a different brand, including store brands, is an option. And again, I would recommend consulting your pediatrician first to make sure that is an acceptable alternative ingredient-wise. Also checking pharmacies, convenience stores, and even baby stores for formula instead of just the big grocery stores. If your baby is at least 6 months and, you know, is ready to start solids, you know, you could also start supplementing with solid foods. But again, I would do that in consultation with your pediatrician. Check your local Women, Infants, and Children or WIC office to see if your baby might be eligible for WIC benefits. And for those parents who can afford it, you know, buying formula online is another option, but I would only stick with well-recognized distributors and pharmacies rather than individually sold or auction sites. And then there's a whole list of don'ts. And, you know, the biggest thing I would say is to not dilute your baby's ready-to-feed formula or add additional water to powdered formulas to make them last longer. This is a really dangerous practice and can cause disruptions in electrolytes and potential seizures in your baby. There have also been a lot of homemade recipes circulating online. And this too is a dangerous practice. Formulas are strictly regulated by the FDA to make sure that they contain recommended nutrients at the right levels necessary for an infant's growth. And so I definitely do not recommend making any of the homemade recipes circulating online. The other thing that I would not recommend is using toddler formulas to feed infants because the nutritional requirements differ by age. And definitely do not switch to cow's milk before the recommended age of 1 year. This could also put your child at risk for intestinal bleeding, and cow's milk doesn't have the right amount of nutrients that a baby needs. Another thing that I have a lot of parents asking me about is using raw goat's milk. And there's a difference between goat's milk and goat's milk-based formula, which can be a safe alternative for certain babies. But goat's milk actually has 2 to 3 times the amount of protein compared to breast milk or formula, which can put a lot of stress on a baby's kidneys and liver. And it also has too little folate and iron, which can cause significant anemia. And then lastly, what I would say is that, you know, I would not buy formula from overseas, since these formulas are not FDA approved. And really the take home message is that for any decisions, you know, that you need to make regarding formula changes or buying formula, please consult your child's pediatrician for guidance and support during this really stressful time for a lot of parents across the nation.
Doctor, thanks so much. A lot of us have seen those videos circulating online, so it's good to know. Get your advice from your medical professional. Doctor, thanks. Now to Ukraine and the intense fighting near Kharkiv, the country's second largest city. Russian shelling hitting a humanitarian aid center. A local mayor accusing Russia of purposefully targeting the facility to create a food crisis. But it comes as reports from British intelligence suggest Russia may be withdrawing forces from Kharkiv to reinforce troops in the east, where Russia appears to be gaining ground. And staying with Russia, where American WNBA player Brittany Griner's detention has been extended by another month, the United States is officially saying she has been wrongfully detained and increasing diplomatic pressure to get her home. NBC News Now's Issa Gutierrez has the latest.
Tonight, jailed WNBA star Brittany Griner's detention extended 1 month. New video showing her with her head down, covered in an orange hoodie, in handcuffs, leaving a Russian courthouse. Her lawyer saying we can expect that the final charge will be brought soon and the case will be sent to court. Griner, a two-time Olympic gold medalist and three-time All-American basketball player, was arrested in February by Russian customs officials at an airport near Moscow, when she was allegedly caught with a vape cartridge containing hash oil, according to Russian authorities. Griner claims she's innocent. The U.S. says she is wrongfully detained.
We take our responsibility to assist U.S. citizens seriously.
Fans and stars from the professional basketball world sharing their outrage on social media with the hashtag WeAreBG. NBA point guard Chris Paul wearing a shirt with Griner's face on it.
He's a huge part of the community here. I mean, we all support her. Just want to try to get her home as soon as possible.
The WNBA adorning each of their courts with her initials and number, BG42, in her honor. Griner has played professional basketball in Russia the last 7 winters.
What is the hardest part about this for you?
The hardest part is that she is over there trying to feed her family.
Her friend and former coach, Basketball Hall of Famer Dawn Staley.
I hope I can come back on your show within the next 30 days with great news, just happy tears of having her home with her family.
Diplomats from the U.S. Embassy spoke with Griner on Friday and reported she is doing well, as can be expected in these circumstances, according to a State Department spokesperson. She's now been imprisoned for more than 80 days and could face up to 10 years in prison if convicted.
What do you want people to know about Brittany and the kind of person that she is?
Is it a dire situation? Absolutely. It is. But, you know, Brittany's tough. She's tough-minded. She's tough-hearted. You know, basketball gives you a certain type of strength to endure pretty much everything.
And Issa Gutierrez joins us now. Issa, I understand a former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Bill Richardson, has been brought in to try to help negotiate Brittany's release.
Yeah, that's right, Gotti. Actually, Brittany's family asked for him to get involved. Richardson is known for helping in these situations. He's helped Americans overseas being held be released in the past. Most recently, Trevor Reed, a former U.S. Marine, just last month, who was released in an exchange. He'd been in prison there in Russia for 3 years. So keep in mind, though, Gotti, this is a process that can really take a long time, especially if in the coming months we find out that she has been convicted.
Issa Gutierrez, thanks so much. Next to Elon Musk's tweet throwing Twitter's future into uncertainty, the world's richest man announcing his deal to buy the social media giant is on hold. And the move is leaving a lot of people wondering if he has a $44 billion case of buyer's remorse. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
Even for Elon Musk, the tweet early this morning landed like a bombshell. Twitter deal temporarily on hold, pending details supporting calculation that spam fake accounts do indeed represent less than 5% of users. Twitter has reported fake accounts make up fewer than 5% of users, though it could be higher. Then, a few hours later, Musk tweeted again, still committed to acquisition. The competing tweets had Wall Street scratching its head, noting Elon's fondness for marijuana.
Was he high when he did the deal, or was he high when he tweeted that?
It was just last month that Musk agreed to buy Twitter for $54.20 a share. But the stock has since dropped to under $42 a share, suggesting he's paying $9 billion too much for a social media platform he uses heavily. This week, Musk said he would lift the ban on former President Trump, but also suggested there are many loose ends to wrap up.
There's still a lot of things that need to get done before this deal concludes.
To make the Twitter deal, Musk plans to use some of his Tesla stock, which has since slid 30%. Today, Tesla moved higher.
He is able to get out, which, by the way, moves the stock of Tesla way up.
With experts speculating Musk's real motivation is to renegotiate or walk away from the Twitter deal, even if he has to pay a $1 billion penalty.
Behind it is a very sharp business mind, and at the heart of it, I think, is he doesn't want to pay that much, and he wants to pay less, and that is a smart business move.
You may have noticed the Dow closed up today, 466 points. Bargain hunters buying up beaten-down stocks after weeks of heavy selling on recession concerns. But if you have a 401k or retirement plan with a long-term time horizon, most advisors recommend staying invested even during the rough patches. Gotti?
And Twitter stock is not the only asset taking a major hit this week. Cryptocurrency at a make-or-break moment after a massive sell-off wiped away more than $200 billion from the market yesterday. Some major coins have recovered while others remain virtually worthless. For more on the turbulent last few days and what it means for investors, CNBC technology reporter Mackenzie Sigalos joins us here on set. So, Mackenzie, Bitcoin is one of the most traded cryptocurrencies. It's one of the things that people check the most and check first. Are they seeing a comeback, or are prices pretty low still?
Good to see you, Gaddy. So Bitcoin is trading just below $30,000. Earlier this week, it was around $25,000. So it's definitely trending upward. But remember, it was at its all-time high of almost $70,000 in November. So it's certainly lost a lot of that value. And every single one of my friends is texting me to say, like, is crypto over? Are we entering a crypto winter? But what I'm hearing from analysts on Wall Street is, hey, we were expecting this. It, you know, the wider crypto market appreciated 350% last year. So it was due for a correction. And that's why we're seeing a sell-off in tech stocks. Those movements are bigger in crypto because they had more gains last year.
And some experts are pointing to one of the stable coins that may have collapsed as one of the reasons why we're seeing all these ripple effects. So for our viewers, can you tell us what is a stable coin and what is a stable coin supposed to do?
Right. So a stable coin is a subset of cryptocurrencies whose value is pegged to the value of a real world asset, whether that's a commodity like gold or fiat currency like the U.S. dollar. And as you said, this week we saw one of the major stablecoin projects whose value is pegged to the U.S. dollar completely implode. And it was this breach of trust. It rippled through the wider crypto market. And we saw other cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin move lower in tandem with that.
Now, this seemed like a pretty wild week, but it's volatility. Yeah. Is this the type of volatility that people should expect when they get into crypto?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that hasn't changed. That's always been the case. But what's different this time is that there are a lot more people with skin in the game, you know, from institutional players on Wall Street who've entered the market in the last year and a half to mom and pop investors. Robinhood and Coinbase are platforms that have made it easier than ever to become a crypto investor.
Mackenzie, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now to the tragic boat capsizing off the coast of Puerto Rico. At least 11 are dead, dozens others hospitalized. The boat filled with migrants from Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and officials have been racing to the scene in an attempt to rescue survivors. NBC's Stephen Romo has more.
That's halfway up.
Tonight, new images show the aftermath of a tragedy that hit the coast of Puerto Rico. The U.S. Coast Guard leading survivors to safety after a boat carrying migrants capsized on Thursday, rescuing seven more migrants today. 11 confirmed dead, at least eight remain hospitalized.
Venían desde anoche, supuestamente. Llegaron, chocaron con la isla, se le volteó la yola.
The U.S. Coast Guard saying the boat flipped over just 10 miles from the island. A Customs and Border Protection aircraft spotted the capsized vessel shortly before noon on Thursday, north of Desecho Island, Puerto Rico. The crew said migrants didn't appear to be wearing life jackets.
Estamos esperando que regresen en embarcaciones que están en el agua, haciendo un rastreo a ver si quedan personas sobrevivientes o si hay algún otro fallecido.
At least 38 migrants survived, the majority of them from Haiti. 36 in total. The two others were from the Dominican Republic.
Me dijo que venían como 70 personas, entre 70 and 72, y que entre ellos habían menores.
This accident, the latest calamity in a journey taken by many migrants seeking safety elsewhere. Just 2 months ago, officials rescuing more than 300 Haitian migrants on a packed boat near the Florida Keys.
If you saw the images of the vessel overloaded severely with 350 migrants, all of their lives were at risk during this journey.
But many say they're being forced to flee and take the risky voyage as Haiti faces increasing violence. Powerful gangs try to control more territory as the country attempts to find its footing after the assassination of the country's president last summer.
And Stephen Romo joins us now in the studio. Stephen, we heard from one of the witnesses that there were possibly 70, 72 people in the water. Are all of them accounted for?
That's the concerning thing right now. Last we heard from the Coast Guard this afternoon, the search continues both by air and by sea, trying to find any remaining people. Of course, with the 38 survivors and the 11 confirmed victims, that means that there could be some people left unaccounted for, meaning the search is continuing now more than 24 hours after the boat was first spotted.
Fingers crossed for a miracle. Thanks so much, Stephen. And turning now to the growing outrage over the death of a Palestinian-American journalist. New video shows Israeli police clashing with pallbearers as they carry the journalist's coffin through the streets of Jerusalem. Our Raf Sanchez was there.
Even in death, no peace for Shireen Abu Akleh. Israeli police beating Palestinian mourners with nightsticks as they try to carry her coffin through the streets of Jerusalem. For one heart-stopping moment, it looks like the coffin will fall. Israeli police say they were responding to rock throwing. Police drone video does show one man throwing a bottle at officers, but doesn't explain why they started hitting the pallbearers carrying the coffin. Police also ripping Palestinian flags off the hearse as it goes by.
They try to control our lives, and they try to control our death and our mourning. That's what it means to live under Israeli military rule.
Abu Akleh, a veteran Palestinian-American journalist with Al Jazeera, was already a household name here for her decades of reporting. Her death has turned her into a Palestinian national icon.
Thousands and thousands of Palestinians have turned out to say goodbye to Shireen Abu Akleh on a day surrounded by heavily armed Israeli police, punctuated by violence.
Al Jazeera says she was killed by Israeli troops Wednesday morning in the occupied West Bank, citing eyewitness reports from her own crew, including a producer who was also shot. Israel's army today releasing a preliminary report saying she could have been shot by Palestinian gunmen, but also acknowledging for the first time one of its soldiers may have fired the fatal round. They say they need Palestinians to work with them to reach a final conclusion.
And unfortunately, the Palestinian Authority is refusing to cooperate.
Palestinians saying they don't trust Israel's military to carry out a fair investigation of its own troops.
Do you have any confidence in that investigation?
Zero confidence. I don't need an investigation. We know who killed her.
The U.S. Embassy saying we are working to bridge cooperation between the parties. Tonight, a journalist killed on the job, going to her grave and waiting for accountability.
Raf Sanchez joins us now from the Damascus Gate in Jerusalem. Raf, you talked in your report about Israeli police pulling down Palestinian flags. Why do they seem so focused on flags?
Yeah, Gadi, Israel wants to prevent any Palestinian national symbols being raised in Jerusalem. That's because Israel claims sovereignty over the entire city. But the so-called two-state solution, which President Biden supports, imagines that one day East Jerusalem would become the capital of an independent Palestinian state. Gadi?
Raf, thank you. Still ahead tonight, dangerous weather out west, wildfires raging across several states, and a massive dust storm stranding drivers in Nebraska. How long this severe weather will last? Plus, chilling 911 calls released as investigators in New York hunt for a serial killer. What a victim told the operator the night she disappeared. And the Tesla crashing into an Ohio convention center, the charges that driver is now facing. Stay with us.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
We're back now with the severe weather out west. A massive wildfire is still raging in New Mexico. High temperatures, winds, and low humidity fueling the flames. Hundreds of thousands of acres burned, and it's still less than 30% contained. And in Nebraska, a massive dust storm blanketing this highway, stranding cars with zero visibility. Those storms in the Midwest killing at least two people. NBC News meteorologist Bill Cairns joins us now. Bill, can you time this one out for us?
Yeah, Gotti, I mean, these storms yesterday were just, I mean, you talk to anyone that lives in South Dakota around Sioux City and Sioux Falls, and it's rare that they're impressed by big storms, but they were impressed yesterday, and there was a lot of damage. Today was a day of cleanup. A lot of farmers lost a lot of their crops, their early crops, because of those high winds, and you saw what all that dust was looking like, too, in areas of Kansas and Nebraska. So here is that storm system, and these blue dots show us where we had high wind reports or wind damage. 274 of them yesterday. And this is the Sioux City. This is Sioux Falls. Then it went north. Northwards, right up into areas of western Minnesota. So today, nothing like that. We've had one confirmed tornado in Illinois. We got this line of storms down through Mississippi, hit and miss storms in the southeast, but we do not have a widespread severe weather outbreak today, and that's good. We're just seeing isolated severe storms possible through the rest of this evening from areas from St. Louis northwards up here through the Quad Cities. That's where that one tornado was reported over on the Illinois side. Up towards Madison, chance of strong storms. And then as we head through this evening, we've had isolated strong storms around Oklahoma City, maybe one or two more with some damaging wind and some large hail. But again, no big outbreaks. The day you have to watch out for as we head through the weekend is going to be Sunday. We have 33 million people that are already in this huge slight risk. So that's a lot of people from the Ohio Valley, Indianapolis included, Louisville, Lexington, all the way down to Memphis and Little Rock, too, and just south of Kansas City. Tornadoes are possible, large hail and damaging winds. That's going to be your Sunday afternoon and evening throughout this region. Something you just have to keep in the back of your mind. We were mentioning the huge fire in New Mexico, the Hermit's Peak fire. This is now up to 270,000 acres. Why is that important? It only has 27,000 acres to go to be the biggest fire ever in the history of New Mexico. So that's like a, you know, that's mind-boggling. So as far as the weekend goes, there's your afternoon storms, and watch out for the heat, Gotti. That's going to be a story in Texas. They're already telling people to conserve energy because the energy grid is already maxed out.
Bill, thank you. Now to a major development in the decade-long search for the infamous Gilgo Beach serial killer. The Long Island Police Department releasing chilling 911 calls that led to the discovery of the first body and then four other victims. NBC's Ann Thompson reports.
Her unfortunate passing is tragic.
Today, police on Long Island trying to solve a 12-year mystery, the disappearance and death of Shannon Gilbert.
There's somebody after me.
Where are you?
There's somebody after me.
Releasing the 911 call on the night 24-year-old Gilbert disappeared.
Where are you, ma'am?
I don't know.
Authorities say Gilbert was a sex worker, driven to a man's house by another man who acted as her de facto security. The men's voices are heard on the call.
No, time to go.
Please.
Police say both men were interviewed and have never been charged or named as suspects.
Listen, I'm going to simplify everything right now. It's a horrible accident. It's tragic.
Gilbert, who police say had a history of substance abuse and mental illness, at times seemed incoherent on the tape. The search for Gilbert led to the discovery of 10 other sets of remains near Gilgo Beach. Many of them were later identified as sex workers. Gilbert's remains were found in a swamp near where she vanished. Today, police said there's no connection between Gilbert and those other Gilgo Beach murders. But if there is more to her death, they hope this audio will prompt someone to come forward. Ann Thompson, NBC News.
And when we come back, disturbing new details on a triple shooting in Dallas, why authorities think the same gunman might be targeting Asian-owned businesses across the city. That's coming up next. Back now with Top Stories News Feed, and we begin with a manhunt for an escaped inmate in Texas. Police say convicted murderer Gonzalo Lopez fled a prison transport bus after getting free of his restraints and then assaulting a corrections officer. It happened about 120 miles north of Houston. Authorities say he wasn't able to get the officer's weapon, but should still be considered dangerous. Authorities in Dallas now think a gunman may be targeting Asian-owned businesses across the city. Police are still searching for the suspect who shot three women inside a Korean-owned hair salon on Wednesday. Authorities now say the car he fled in matches the description from a car used in two other shootings at Asian-owned businesses this month as well as last month. A driver is facing charges tonight after a wild crash in Columbus, Ohio. New video shows a speeding Tesla crash into the front of a Columbus convention center. Police say the driver was going 70 miles an hour at the time. The driver claims he lost control of the vehicle when the brakes failed. Damage to the building are estimated to be around $350,000. And a Tennessee nurse who has been sentenced to 3 years probation for the accidental death of a patient, Rhonda Vaught, was convicted of criminally negligent homicide in March. In 2017, she gave a patient the wrong medication, which resulted in that woman's death. Nurses from across the country traveled to Nashville to protest her conviction. A petition to grant her clemency has received more than 210,000 signatures. And turning now to a look inside U.S. prisons where certain books, especially Black and Latino stories, are banned. Studies show reading plays a large role in recidivism. But what books are actually allowed behind bars? Priscilla Thompson has the story.
Arthur Longworth still remembers how it felt to receive a book during the 38 years he served in a Washington state prison.
Books felt like a tool for changing your circumstance, an ability to step outside prison, at least just for a brief moment.
What was your favorite book that you read during that time and why?
It was just a simple short novel, which just laid out one day in a Russian gulag prisoner's life.
Sentenced to life in prison for a murder he committed at the age of 20, Longworth has spent most of his life behind bars.
I came to prison as a young person for killing somebody. It's horrible. I regret it. It is my fault. And at the same time, I realized through reading the book that I'm not an anomaly.
A month ago, he got out. Now in the free world, Longworth recognizes all the books he couldn't read while in prison.
So much is not allowed in.
Prisons and jails have long banned books that officials deem dangerous or inappropriate, but the rules on what books can and can't be sent to prisoners vary wildly across states and jurisdictions. Andy Chan is the president of Books to Prisoners, a nonprofit that sends books to inmates.
Alice Walker's Color Purple has been banned from several prisons, but there's other cases that they allowed a variety of books by right-wing authors, including Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. So if the concern is about the good order of the prison, where is the consistency?
Research shows the bans tend to target books about Black history, Native and Latinx publications, and LGBTQ fiction, similar to genres being targeted in American schools, now at the center of the country's culture wars. A few months ago, Chan posted this now viral tweet about a biography of Malcolm X intended for teenagers that was rejected by a Tennessee prison late last year, with a note that read, "Malcolm X, not allowed."
The mindset that we come across that in certain mailrooms that says anything to do with Black studies or Black empowerment or Native studies or a number of different things will be damaging to the good order of their prison system.
Books to Prisoners gets around 1,000 book requests each month. Chan says roughly 5% are rejected, often without explanation. One of those prisoners on the receiving end of that rejection is Stevie.
I get very angry. I feel cut off from the world.
Stevie, whose face we're not allowed to record due to prison policy, says there was once a time when he couldn't wait for mail call to see what he'd gotten. But after more than a decade in Pennsylvania prisons, Stevie says he's grown frustrated with the process, filing more than 300 grievances over the issue in the past year.
I've been in one prison and they said, yeah, you can have it. You go to another prison, they say, no, you can't have it. It's very arbitrary.
Some states, including Pennsylvania, have a committee that decides which books and publications get in and which are kept out. A spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections tells NBC News that most books and publications are banned for explicit content or nudity, and that the deciding committees are comprised of three people, one from each prison's security, education, and mailroom department.
A lot of times these prisons are actually situated in rural areas, and the people who are making these decisions are not people who are familiar with certain histories, dictating what people of color can and cannot read.
The reality is, we don't know the race or ethnicity of the committee members making those decisions. The state says they don't track it.
What needs to change?
I think there should actually be some rules set in place that aren't as vague. And we have to also have people who are culturally competent.
Who knows who I would be if I wasn't able to educate myself in prison? But I don't think we're living up to our values as Americans by allowing this.
And Priscilla joins us now in studio. Priscilla, in prison, reading is linked to recidivism, right?
Absolutely, Gotti. Education is considered one of the best tools for helping to reduce the recidivism rate. But advocates that we've spoken to say a lot of prison libraries are underfunded and they have limited options that don't exactly inspire someone to want to crack a book open. And that is why the advocates and the prisoners that we've spoken to say it is so important to allow more books on a broader range of topics into these facilities.
Fascinating report. Thanks so much, Priscilla. And if it's Friday night, you know it's Dateline tonight. After a prominent plastic surgeon and local musician is murdered in his home, investigators uncover a trail of clues pointing to an unlikely killer. Dateline's Keith Morrison has that story.
Barely visible, sprawled on the couch, was the body of 64-year-old Buddy McCutcheon.
There's a shotgun here in the corner. I'm going to go check the backyard.
This door was unsecure when we came in, Keith.
Detective John Ledford, roused from sleep, drove through the early morning light to the McCutcheon house and tried to prepare for whatever he might find.
He was lying on the couch, facing the rear of the couch.
Was it obvious what kind of injury he had received?
It was obvious there was a gunshot wound. There was no exit wound, but it was fairly apparent it was an entry wound to the top of the head.
Ledford wasn't sure what to make of it. Violent crime like this was uncommon in Asheville and rarely involved a victim like Dr. Buddy McCutcheon.
You've got a doctor, a plastic surgeon, in a upper middle class neighborhood, deceased in his living room. That in of itself is somewhat unusual.
Ledford's partner, Detective Walt Thrower, arrived next, armed with a warrant to search the house.
There was some early speculation. Could this be a suicide?
I hadn't seen one.
Or something more sinister.
Dateline's Keith Morrison joins us now. Keith, this man was a surgeon. He was well respected in his community. How did they start to narrow down the list of suspects here?
Well, this is one of those stories where it wasn't that there were a lot of suspects, that they really couldn't find any, except for a couple of possibilities. But it was one of those stories that where the evidence doesn't tell you much. And so you have to kind of look at all the circumstantial stuff, and it could lead in a number of different directions. So there were people on both sides of a divide on this, people who thought that, one result occurred, people who thought another result occurred, depending on how they internally processed this circumstantial stuff. You know, an awful lot like what's going on in the country these days. People take a position and then kind of defend that position. There isn't really a lot of evidence to go either way. And this was that kind of story.
And you spoke to some of the detectives who worked on the case. They were also members of the Asheville community. What surprised them about what they found?
I think it was, there are a lot of personal things in a story like this. And there are always surprises associated with them. But the biggest thing for the detectives was that they simply couldn't nail it down. And year after year after year went by, terrifically frustrating for them. They thought they had a pretty good idea what happened, but they couldn't persuade anybody there was a case to be made. It was one of those sorts of situations. So eventually, somebody had a brainwave. And that's the essence of the story.
We can't wait to watch. You can catch all this tonight, Dateline, at 9 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Coming up, the terror investigation in Germany after a knife attack on a train. Plus, the deadly fire tearing through a commercial building in India. How people inside tried to escape the flames.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Back now with Top Stories Global Watch, and we begin with the terror investigation after a knife attack on a train in Germany. Authorities say a 31-year-old man stabbed passengers as the train pulled out of a station near the border with Switzerland. Other passengers managed to disarm and subdue him until authorities arrived. Five people were injured but are expected to be okay. Authorities say the Iraqi-born man was investigated for extremism in 2017. More than two dozen people are dead after a fire in India. New video shows flames ripping through the four-story commercial building in Delhi. Eyewitnesses say people jumped out of windows or tried to use rope to escape. So far, at least 27 people were killed and more than a dozen were injured. The cause is still under investigation. And Queen Elizabeth made a surprise appearance just days after missing the state opening of Parliament. The 96-year-old arrived at the Royal Windsor Horse Show this afternoon. On Tuesday, she missed the annual reading of the Queen's speech for the first time since 1963. The monarch was last seen in public in March and has had to cancel a number of recent public appearances due to mobility issues. And when we come back, a look at what you can binge this weekend, the true crime miniseries this Friday the 13th, plus the award-winning comedy Hacks is returning for season two, and some highly anticipated new music from Kendrick Lamar. That and more coming up next. And we are back now with Binge Worthy, our look at the best things to watch and listen to this weekend. It is Friday, so let's have some fun. Let's bring in NBC News reporter Doa Madani. Doa, thanks so much for joining us. I want to start with this new documentary on Netflix. It's based on a true crime story. Super, super creepy. Just saw the trailer. Let's take a look.
Yeah. I was 35, and I take a DNA test.
When I opened up Ancestry, I had over 3,000 hits.
All of these random names were popping up, and it said close family.
We all matched the name Klein.
Dr. Klein was the best infertility doctor in Indianapolis.
Right then, I knew Klein was our biological father.
So that's when strange things started happening.
Yikes. And that is aptly called the father.
Yeah, I think it's our father. But it's honestly so fascinating. I wish I had a flow chart for all of these siblings and how they're related. And it's just, it blows your mind because I learned so much about how unregulated IVF is through watching this. But it's so compelling to see these people get to know each other and try and figure out this web of their father. It's so bizarre. And honestly, you just don't feel like it's real, but it is.
And this all happened in a small community. So
yeah.
You have a bunch of people that look oddly alike walking around the street, not knowing if they're related to the people that they're walking by.
Or horrifyingly dating. Like, that's the first thing that comes to mind is how terrifying is that? You might have accidentally made out with your sibling. It's so bizarre. It can't, like, it just feels like it cannot be real. And that's why you keep watching.
And did all of this come together because of like DNA testing and the 23andMe and the Ancestry.com?
This huge rise of like 23andMe, these DNA kits, people get gifted them for Christmas and their birthdays, particularly people who want to know, you know, am I an eighth Italian or anything like that? And then it's how they caught the Golden State Killer, too. It's such a really interesting way that science has opened our eyes to a lot of really scary things.
That's going to be a fascinating watch. Another one that is coming up here, one of my favorite shows, Hacks. let's take a look.
I know I bombed at my show. On this tour, it's all about back to basics. And we need a really good tour manager.
My name's Alice. Everybody calls me Weed. That's a nickname Pete Wentz gave me. And once Pete gives you a nickname, it sticks.
Tour starts tonight.
Okay, season two. And you were just telling me, how did it end in season one? Where's this going?
Okay, well, you should binge season one and catch up your memory. But if you haven't, Ava sent this really angry email to a group of people who were trying to create a new show. And it was basically disparaging Deb. And now she has to go on tour with Deb for a few weeks. Right. And it's a road trip. So it's close confines with this woman that she knows she has just sent an email in writing with the worst things you could say about her. I think HBO comedies are so underrated, and I'm so excited for the introduction of Laurie Metcalf in this season. I think it's going to be really great.
And next, we've got this highly anticipated show, Candy, on Hulu, starring Jessica Biel, who doesn't look recognizable at all. Let's take a watch.
It's amazing.
I know, it makes me horrible. I have an affair. That's Betty's husband.
He's married.
I know, but don't I deserve more?
Candy, we were so close, and
I've just been so busy. She knows.
Hey, y'all.
10 seconds.
Something terrible has happened. It's Betty.
Something terrible involving an axe?
Yeah, I'll let you find out. You should watch it. So I've said this on Binge Worthy. I'm not a true crime person, but my friends all are, so they convinced me to watch this. And what I really enjoyed about this series, and I think the finale is what went up tonight, it focuses on character and not salaciousness, and it's just this fascinating psychology of who would do something like this. And to Jessica Biel's credit, I think she plays a scary, angry, possibly killer woman way too well.
Did you say that Justin Timberlake is also in this?
Justin Timberlake, see if you can recognize figure out who he is, because if you want to talk about transformation, the two of them are just unrecognizable.
Incredible. And we've got another series on Hulu based on the book. It's by Sally Rooney. This one's called Conversations with Friends. Let's take a watch.
I don't want to hurt your marriage.
My marriage is 5 separate affairs already. I've just never been party to them.
I kissed Melissa. We've been flirting when it just happened.
Who knows what happens between two people when they're alone?
Well, what can you tell us about this one?
Well, I don't know if you watched Normal People, which is also a Sally Rooney adaptation by Hulu and the BBC. They won, I think they were nominated for several awards and got a ton of critical acclaim. This is sort of another novel by Sally Rooney. Joe Alwyn told NBC that he's so compelled by the messiness of these characters. They're inherently flawed, and it's a messy love story. I really am excited. I'm going to binge it on Sunday when it comes out. I think what's really beautiful about these stories is they're not tidy. They're very open-ended by the time the series finishes, which I think is more reflective of real life and actually becomes more relatable, which is Sally Rooney's real gift to the literary world.
A lot of anti-heroes.
A ton of anti-heroes. I think it's really hard for me because I want to love my characters, and it challenges
I'm
me.
I'm the same exact way.
I want to champion them, uh-huh. And then it challenges me to think about them in different ways. And, like, the world is not perfect. It's a lot of gray, and I think that's what makes it so good to watch.
And it keeps you coming back. That's the thing. You think that you're done with this character, and they just give you something to make you tune in.
You think you know what they're going to do because mm-hmm. it's what you would do, and then they go completely left.
Now, talking about one of the things that I'm most excited about. This one, it's getting released soon. It is about UFOs and the government by Blink-182's Tom DeLonge. Let's check out a little bit
you
of this clip.
In jail for all this.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I don't want to die.
What is wrong with you?
Dad never thought I was crazy. It's who your father and I used to work for. The government agency that doesn't exist.
Right.
What was that?
Now, here's the thing. I'm so excited about this one because there's this little golden nugget that they have in the trailer, and that's this shot of a folder on a desk, and it says A-Tip. And oddly enough, we've been covering this weird whatever's going on with aerial phenomenon and the U.S. government, and A-Tip is the name of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program.
Tom DeLonge was somehow involved in this.
It's honestly, it feels more like a mockumentary than an action comedy flick. We were talking about this. Tom DeLonge is so invested in outer space that he's founded this, like, what's it called?
To the Stars Academy. And he brought in some of these former spooks from the Pentagon. They were working with him. And then some of those videos that you see of aerial phenomena that you can't explain, those come from To the Stars Academy. So
it's so interesting.
You're like, what is going on? And next Tuesday, Congress is going to have its first congressional hearing on these potential threats or this phenomenon that they just can't explain. So we're hoping that we're going to get some answers. And hopefully it looks nothing like that.
Yeah, well, this whole thing has brought a new light to Angels and Airwaves for me.
Right, exactly. All the times that he was doing Boxcar Racer, Blink-182, Angels and Airwaves, he was sitting there reading the books.
It's so crazy.
UFOs.
It's so funny.
Who would have thought? All right, and now we've got some new music. First, Kendrick Lamar. I don't have to say much more. It is the number one trending music on YouTube right now, The Heart Part 5.
New GoFundMe accounts to proceed. A brand new victim, a shatter those dreams, the culture.
That song, I was cleaning bottles while I was watching it. I had an iPad on, and I look over. I'm like, wait, is that O.J. Simpson? Wait, is that...
The deep fake in the music video is so weird. This whole song is super weird because, I mean, in a good way, but it's not a part of the album he just released. It's its own single, and he uses all this deep fake technology in the music video, and on top of that, it's got, like, this 70s kind of funk backing to it that just, it's so infectious. It's so... Kendrick just constantly keeps you guessing, and I listened to this and I was like, this is Kendrick, but it's not.
Right. He's the poet of our generation, basically. You don't think so?
I like Donald Glover. I think he's our... I'm an Atlanta fan, so I would... But I do
West
love Kendrick.
Coast is the best coast, some may say.
I'm a New Yorker, I know, but we'll
duke it out after this. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for watching Top Story tonight. For Tom Yamas, I'm Gotti Schwartz here in New York. Stay right there for more news on the way.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.